Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 80.
House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The sergeant at arms will close the doors. Members and visitors are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Quick. We'd ask all members and visitors to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Representative Quick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Acknowledging a diversity of faith, I ask that you would please pray with me. Perfect God, Lord and Majesty of the universe, please create in us a clean heart and renew a right spirit as we humbly bow before you in prayer. As we gather today, we thank you and submissively invite your divine intervention. Because you told us to ask, we petition your involvement and guidance in our affairs, both personal and political. Because you told us to seek, we eagerly yearn for the way in which you would have us to go. Because you told us to knock and you would open, we ask for the doors of wisdom, unity, and exceeding blessings be open to us and the citizens of this great state. May your loving hand be upon we who are involved in the legislative affairs of this state, both elected officials and those who do the important support work. And may peace, prosperity, obedience, and faithfulness be the lot and condition of our state. In the matchless name of Christ we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for June 18th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Lewis moves the journal for June 18th to be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Members, please join me in welcoming our nurse of the day and also a good friend of mine, Patty Alexander from Shelby, who's also the wife of Senator Ted Alexander. Patty, thanks for being with us today. And, Patty, we're glad to loan you to the Senate. They tend to be a lot older and slower over there on the other side of the building if you want to take care of them. Ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
The enrolling clerk reports the following bill duly ratified, properly enrolled, and prepared for presentation to the Office of the Secretary of State. Senate Bill 235, an act to grant municipalities in Franklin and Nash counties the authority to address abandoned structures in the same manner as municipalities in larger counties.
Chapter bills will be noted. Representative Lewis recognized, send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Lewis, Rules Calendar Operations of the House Committee Report, Senate Bill 225, repeal tuition surcharge, favorable.
Counter present Rule 36B. Representatives Davis and Stevens recognized, send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Davis and Stevens, Judiciary Committee Report, Senate Bill 127, Protect Governmental Accountability, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 394, Changes of Estate and Trust Statutes, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 594, Register of Deeds Updates, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar and Operations of the House.
Bill is also referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar and Operations of the House. Representatives Corbin and Warren are recognized to send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Corbin and Warren, State and Local Government Committee Report, Senate Bill 270, Durham Deannexation, favorable and referred to Finance.
Bill is referred to Finance Committee.
Senate Bill 525. Feasibility of Textile Historic Site, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 610, authorized Northern Peaks Trail, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 378, Local Economic Development Modifications, favorable House Committee Substitute, unfavorable Senate Committee Substitute, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Committee Substitute placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House Committee Substitute is referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. Representative Lewis, recognized, send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Lewis, rules calling operations of the House Committee Report, House Bill 19, Dare County, Community College Construction Fund, favorable committee substitute, unfavorable original bill.
Original bill on favorable counter, committee substitute counter, pursuant to Rule 36B. Members of the House, come to order. This appears to be a, chair would believe, maybe a non-controversial bill. It's Dare County Community College Construction Funds. Any objection to that being added today? And objected to will not be added today. We'll pick a date. Messages from the Senate. Clerk will read.
House Bill 383, Senate Committee Substitute, Third Edition, a bill to be entitled an act amending the charter of the town of Topsail Beach to provide for the filing of vacancies, filling of vacancies on the Board of Commissioners and to clarify the timing of the organizational meeting of the Pender County Board of Education for concurrence in the Senate Committee Substitute.
Bill is placed on the counter, pursuant to Rule 36B for June 24th.
House Bill 924, Senate Committee Substitute, Fifth Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to clarify eligibility for extended teacher contracts to require completion of an economic and personal finance course as a high school graduation requirement in public schools, to clarify requirement for high school civic literacy, and to require professional development in economic and personal finance teachers for concurrence in the Senate Committee Substitute.
Bill is placed on the counter, pursuant to Rule 36B for June 24th.
Senate Bill 315, Committee Substitute Number 3, Fifth Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to make various changes to the agriculture laws of the state.
Bills referred to the Committee on Agriculture, if favorable, finance, if favorable, judiciary, if favorable, rules, counter, operations of the House. Counter, House Bill 57. The clerk will read.
Representatives Elmore, Johnson, and Horn, House Bill 57, a bill to be entitled an act to create a term of public schools that includes various types of public schools in the state and to codify the North Carolina Virtual Public School Program. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
What purpose, gentlemen from Wilkes, Representative Elmore, rise.
A motion.
Gentlemen recognized for a motion.
I make a motion to concur to House Bill 57.
Gentleman's made a motion the House to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 57. The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Very quickly, this bill passed overwhelmingly over here, and they actually made a staff recommended technical change on the Senate side, so that was the only change that was made. I appreciate your support on the motion.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of the motion to concur with Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 57. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Brockman on the floor. Clerk will machine record the vote. 111 having voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. The House does concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 57. The bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. Chair is going to suspend Rule 12H for the day. House Bill, actually, before we take the next bill up, Representative Speciale informed the chair he wanted to withdraw his objection to the bill the chair was going to add. It's now called Create DRE Equipment, House Bill 19. Act to authorize the State Board of Elections to permit continued use of certain direct recording electronic voting systems under certain conditions is the revised total. Gentleman withdraws objection. Representative, you want to look at it, Representative Jackson?
I would.
You approach the dais, take a look, and we'll come back to it. It's not, It's not time sensitive, but if we can get rid of other bills, glad to do those, but glad to put them on for another day. So, House Bill 389, the clerk will read.
Representatives Bell, Bowes, Goodman, and Lewis, House Bill 389, a bill to be entitled Act to authorize public colleges and universities to allow alcohol sales in stadiums, athletic facilities, and arenas located on school property. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Wayne, Representative Bell, rise.
Move for a motion of concurrence.
Gentlemen's moved that the House do concur with the Senate Committee substitute House Bill 389. The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our members, this bill was debated three times in the House, and plus on the floor, three times in the Senate, plus the floor. The only change that was made in the Senate, which was brought back over here for concurrence, was a little provision there for Winston-Salem State University to allow them to participate. Other than that, all parties are still agreeable. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 389. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk Lock Machine, record the vote. 88 having voted in the affirmative and 25 in the negative. The motion to concur is adopted. The bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. For what purpose, gentleman from Guilford? Representative Brockman, rise.
Can I be voted as aye on House Bill 57?
Gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on House Bill 57. House Bill 531, the clerk will read.
Representative Hannick and Stevens, House Bill 531, a bill to be entitled an act to make changes to general statutes to reflect the restoration of the Federal Protection Tenants for Foreclosure Act. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Currituck, Representative Hanning, rise.
Motion to concur.
Gentlemen's recognized has moved that the House do concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 531, and now the gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill went through the House and the Senate unanimously. The only change was made was a technical correction, and I appreciate your green vote on this. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, question for the House, the adoption of the motion to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 531. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Okay. Clerk Lock Machine, record the vote. 115 having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 531. Bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. House Bill 664, the clerk will read.
Representative Fraley, House Bill 664, a bill to be entitled an act to establish an education attainment goal for the state. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Iredell, Representative Fraley, recognized for a motion.
Yes, I move to concur with House Bill 664, the Senate version.
The gentleman has moved the House to concur. The gentleman has the floor to debate the motion.
Ask for your support on this bill. It's passed through the House and the Senate. The only change was just a minor technical change in the Senate. It involves the secondary attainment goal of education certificates or degrees. Ask for your support.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion to concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 664. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Art, gentleman like to record. Clerk will lock machine, record the vote. 114 having voted in the affirmative, one of the negative. The House does concur with the Senate Committee substitute to House Bill 664. Bill is ordered enrolled and sent to the governor. All right, we're going to try this a third time. House Bill 19 was the certain DRE equipment bill. Chair has been informed there's now no objection to the bill being added to the calendar. Any objection? Hearing none, the bill is added to today's calendar. Senate Bill 242, the clerk will read.
Senator Bergen, Senate Bill 242, a bill to enact an act related to subdivision recreational facilities in Harnett County and concerning public-private reimbursement agreement with park infrastructure development by Mecklenburg County. General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
The gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'll begin by saying that the first part of this bill, for any of my members that may be concerned, this is not a new fee. It is simply a change in the definition of how this fee that is already being imposed can be used. The second part of the bill comes at the request of Mecklenburg County, to the best of my understanding, and frankly, I'm not aware of any opposition to either section of this bill, and would ask my fellow members to please support the bill.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Union, Representative Brody, rise?
Test the bill holder, handler of the question, please.
Representative Lewis, the gentleman yield?
Yes, sir.
Yields.
Representative Lewis, it appears that this is voluntary for the developer. Is that true? Is that because you use the word may instead of shall? Is that true?
Yes, sir. Our county, like a lot of counties, has a process where when a developer wants to build, there is the opportunity to maybe provide some land to build a school or something like that, or in lieu of that, they may pay this fee. This fee has been in place for a long time to buy land for recreation, for parks and things like that. This would just allow this money, which is, again, already being voluntarily paid, to be used to construct playgrounds and stuff on the land that we already own.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 242 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk lock machine record the vote. 108 having voted in the affirmative, 4 in the negative. Senate Bill 242 passes second reading and will without objection be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 242 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 242 having passed third reading will be returned to the Senate for concurrence. House Bill 37, clerk will read.
Representatives Rydell, White, Torvik, and Brian Turner, House Bill 37, a bill to be entitled an act extending the statute of limitations for civil action for child sexual abuse so that the plaintiff have until 38 to commence an action and to require training for child sex abuse and sex trafficking for school personnel. General North Carolina acts.
For what purpose, gentleman from Alamance, Representative Rydell Rice,
to speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Friends, this is a victim's rights bill. This is a bill about helping to prevent child sexual abuse. This is not a happy topic that any of us want to discuss, but it's a necessary one. The AMA calls child sexual abuse a silent epidemic in our land. The bill seeks to resolve that epidemic by doing several things. Currently, there are 42 million survivors of sexual abuse in our country. If you take a conservative number that half of those 42 million are victims of childhood sexual abuse, you come up with 21 million victims in our land, in our nation. We've all been to the Vietnam Memorial. There's over 58,000 names on that memorial. To account for the 21 million victims of childhood sexual abuse would require over 350 Vietnam Memorial walls. And 58,000 names times 350. That's the extent of this. It is an epidemic. One in four women will be sexually abused before their 18th birthday. One in six men will be sexually abused before their 18th birthday. Those four ladies you saw in the cafeteria enjoying a lunch together, likelihood of one being a victim is 100%. Last Saturday, those men you saw playing softball, the likelihood that one in six of them is a victim, 100%. This is an epidemic. It's a silent epidemic. Everyone here in this room, everyone hearing my voice, knows at least one, two, or maybe three victims of childhood sexual abuse. And if you say, no, I really don't know anybody like that, it's simply because the people you do know who are victims have chosen not to disclose it. And that's what makes this crime so insidious. The victims of childhood sexual abuse sometimes take years or decades before they have the emotional strength to face down their accuser, to face down their abuser. The impact of a five-minute despicable and vile act with a child has lifetime consequences for the child and virtually none for the abuser. Less than 10% of predators spend any time in jail. The list of emotional problems that survivors go through are legion. The greatest is shame. And that's another reason why it's a silent epidemic. Who wants to talk about being violated as a child? Who wants to bring that subject up? So most victims bury it. You know, the typical human response to a traumatic event is repression. And that's what most of the victims of childhood sexual abuse end up doing, is repressing it, not talking about it. That doesn't solve the problem. We know today from brain science that trauma inflicted on a child and child sexual abuse is the greatest of those. That trauma inflicted or experienced by a child can damage the brain. A child's brain is developing through their juvenile years up into adulthood, up into the mid-20s. The brain is still growing and still making connections. And we know today from MRI studies and research that a victim of child sexual abuse, the trauma stops the development of certain parts of the brain. Now, this can be undone through therapy, and they can get back to a normal life, but there is damage done, and that explains what happens with most of the victims of childhood sexual abuse. They end up with many antisocial pathologies. They have a higher incidence of drug abuse, a higher incidence of being re-victimized, a higher incidence of suicide, a higher incidence of health issues, a higher incidence of anger, of isolation, of feelings of hopelessness, betrayal, ambivalence. This all plays out in their life, and they end up becoming, oftentimes, customers, clients of our social services network, our juvenile justice system, and other healthcare networks. The average cost for a victim over their lifespan of services needed, therapy, so forth, is over $210,000. That's the average cost per victim. Who's paying that? Oftentimes, it is the victim. Or it's going to be the taxpayer and the community. What this bill does, by extending the statute of limitations for a civil suit for victims of child sexual abuse, it allows us to shift the cost to the perpetrator and away from either the victim or the rest of us. 75% of women who seek treatment in various programs were victims of childhood sexual abuse. The cost annually in our country is over $150 billion. Currently, our law reads as follows. If you file a suit for criminal child sexual abuse, there is no statute of limitations. You can file that suit at age 85. You can file that suit at age 18. However, in the area of civil suits, to recover damages for the damage done to that young soul, to the damage done to that wounded heart, you only have between the age of 18 and 21 currently. Now, there is an exception possibly for a 10-year additional period to be added, depending on your age and the realization of when you were abused. But think about that. Most victims age out at 21. They cannot recover any costs. They are prohibited by law from doing so. They've been damaged, but who do they go to for justice? What this bill does is extend that age from 21 to 38. Understand, friends, that's low. The average age of disclosure for a victim of childhood sexual abuse is 52. I'm dealing with the realities of what I can get done. My bill originally had 45 years as the age. I brought it down to 38 to try to get the support we need to get it passed. We need to do something rather than nothing. It is time. It is past time for North Carolina to get serious about preventing child abuse, for North Carolina to get serious about helping those who are victims, and for North Carolina to stop being a safe haven for predators. If you are a predator, all you have to do typically is keep your victim shut up until the age of 21, and you have nothing to worry about. Is that the kind of state we want to be? A place that is a harbor, a safe harbor for child predators? I think not. I hope you'll join me in standing for the rights of the victims of childhood sexual abuse and vote green on House Bill 37. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Catawba, Representative Adams, rise?
To debate the bill.
Chairman has the floor to debate the bill.
You know, this is an aspirational bill, and I really do want to support this, but I think we really need to discuss what the potential of this bill is. One of the things I hate about laws is when they're used for vindictiveness, when somebody believes they can use a law against somebody. And this, I'm afraid, has that potential. I think that people, let's ask this question of ourselves. What is sexual abuse? What is child sexual abuse? I asked the question in committee, and there is no true definition of it. But moreover, what is the definition of child sexual abuse 38 years ago? Very different from today. What will be the definition of child sexual abuse 38 years from now? How will cultural mores change in 38 years? I will probably vote for this bill because I aspire to see child sexual abuse be done with. I have seen what happens. I know what the bill sponsor is talking about, and I suspect I've seen it in a lot of other people. It is a serious problem. But we need to discuss this. We need to understand what we're doing here. We are creating a law that could be extremely powerful in the hands of wrong people, people who want to get back at somebody, perhaps a sibling, over something unrelated to sexual abuse. I was locked in a room as a child for almost 2 days, not by my parents, but by a babysitter. Was that child abuse? It is today, but 50 years ago it was discipline. So I just ask you to consider the full ramifications of this bill, and I hope to hear from you. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Hardister, rise?
To send forth an amendment.
The gentleman is recognized to send forth an amendment. Corporal Reed.
Representative Hardister moves to amend the bill on page 2, lines 29 through 39, by rewriting the lines to read.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, what this amendment would do is it would direct LEAs, charter schools, and other educational authorities to provide school personnel with training related to child abuse, sexual abuse, and human trafficking. The training would pertain to school personnel, which in the amendment is defined as teachers, instructional support personnel, principals, and assistant principals. The term may include, in the discretion of the employing entity, other school employees who work directly with students in grades K through 12. The amendment goes on to, the amendment goes on to specify that the employing entity can adopt and implement a child sexual abuse and sex trafficking training program for school personnel. Members, this currently does not exist. There's no training of this nature that's currently required. But the amendment does allow LEAs, charter schools, and other authorities to have flexibility so they can implement this type of training. It would be done once every other year, 2 hours once every other year. And the amendment even specifies it would take place in an even year. So if we adopt this, the bill becomes law, this would begin to take effect next year in 2020. And also the amendment stipulates that the authority could work and consult with non-governmental agencies, law enforcement, or officers of the court. So we're certainly not trying to be overbearing at all in how we're doing this. We just want to have a framework in place. We want to make sure that school personnel are aware of the potential warning signs of a victim of sex trafficking and sexual abuse. I did work with Representative Riddell on this amendment, And also, I would note that I consulted with the School Board Association, and they've signed off on this amendment. I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
For debate on the amendment, the gentleman from Alamance, Representative Riddell, recognized to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I encourage you to vote green on the amendment.
Representative Torbert, is this on the amendment? Representative Pittman, is this on the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman is recognized.
Representative Rogers and I were looking at the last line, and it doesn't seem to be a complete sentence. There's not a verb, or not a complete verb. Anyway, it says no entity required. Shouldn't that be no entity is required?
Mr. Speaker.
Chairman's recognized.
Thank you. I did consult with staff. Representative Warren raised this question earlier, and staff has indicated that this language is correct, that it's actually a lead-in for the next part of the bill, and it has no material effect on the amendment.
On the any further debate on the amendment, Representative Elmore, gentleman is recognized.
It's not debate; it's a question for Representative Hardister.
Representative Hardister, gentleman, yield.
I yield.
Yields.
The way this is worded, Representative, would this allow for this type of training to be done online through a module type format?
Yes, sir.
Much of our trainings on these kind of issues is done that way.
Yes, sir. That's my understanding. I'll yield to Representative Riddell if I'm incorrect, but yes, sir, that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Several lights. Any of these members wish to debate the amendment? If not, the question for the House is the passage of Amendment A1. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Is Representative Insko on the floor? Clerk will light machine record the vote. 113 having voted in the affirmative and none the negative. The amendment's adopted. We're now back on the bill. For what purpose, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbert, rise?
Ask Representative Rondell a question.
Gentleman from Alamance, yield?
Certainly.
Yields.
Would you mind touching base if you know about what's occurred in other states that have also extended their time period to a similar extension as ours?
Thank you for the question, Representative Torbert. Several states have a longer period than 38. Indeed, seven states, Alaska, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Illinois, Maine, Minnesota, and the territory of Guam, have no statute of limitations at all on civil proceedings. Now, of those seven states I just listed, can anyone tell me where the wheels have come off their justice system because they have been inundated with false accusations? The answer is no. It has not happened in other states where this has been done, where the statute of limitations has either been eliminated altogether for civil suits or it's been extended. Most recently, New Jersey established a statute of limitations for civil law, for civil suits, at the age of 55. This was done in the last several months. The trend in our land, friends, is recognizing the brain science that's out there, the long-term debilitating effects that it has on a child to be abused like this, and the ability to finally come forward only as an adult, as a seasoned adult. Again, remember, the average age of disclosing to someone that you have been abused in this terrible way as a child is age 52. This bill sets it at age 38 to file a claim. Now, the bill also allows a two-year window of looking back, one-time deal, for anybody over the age of 38 who wants to come forward and file a civil suit. They have 2 years in which to do that. So I encourage you to keep that in mind. We heard this in committee. I've heard it ever since the bill was introduced, that this is going to bring out a swarm of false lawsuits. It has not happened. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Black, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question, please.
Gentleman from Alamance, yield.
Yes, sir.
Yields.
Thank you. What is the age of a child and what is the age of the adult? So as we're thinking about the bill, I'd like to know the age of the child. Do you have that? Where are we stopping that age?
It would be from zero to just before the 18th birthday.
And then the adult age would be?
18 and on.
18 and up. So if it's...
Lady, have an additional question?
Yes, please.
Gentleman, yield.
Thank you.
Yield.
So if the age is very close, how does that work? So if the child is 1 year, let's say the child is 1 year older than the adult age.
Say 19.
Okay, so.
Additional question?
An additional question.
Jim, yield.
Just trying.
Thank you, Ms.
Jim, yield.
Yes.
Yields.
If you are 18 years old, you have 3 years currently in which to file a suit. You have till age 21. The law reads 3 years above majority, majority being age 18.
May I make a comment, please?
May I recognize to debate the bill?
Thank you very much. I am going to support the bill, but as a psychotherapist, I know how very difficult these cases can be and how difficult it is for the perpetrator, for the child, sometimes for people who are very close in age who think they might be in a relationship. So as we are thinking about further bills related to sexual abuse, I think it's going to be extremely important for us to look at some of the other bills that we have in North Carolina so that we are making sure that we are protecting everyone. So thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of House Bill 37 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 103 having voted in the affirmative and 11 of the negative. House Bill 37 passed the second reading. Will without objection be read third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 37 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed no. The ayes have it. House Bill 37 having passed third reading is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate. Members of the chair knows that the next bill is going to take a couple minutes. The chair would like to skip down to a couple other bills that maybe go a little more quickly. Senate Bill 466, clerk will read.
Senator Reed Jackson, Gunn, and Edwards. Senate Bill 466, a bill to entitle an act to modify certain provisions concerning the Economic Development Partnership for North Carolina. General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Sane, recognize debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill comes to us from the Senate. Senator Jackson worked on this. It also comes out of PED, concerns EDPNC modifications. I'll try to quickly summarize, but what it does, it allows the Secretary of Commerce to be also involved and engaged on that board, and also looks at some of the contracting between the Department of Commerce and the EDPNC. I don't know of any opposition, and appreciate your support.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 466. On second reading, those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 112, having voted in the affirmative, 1 in the negative. Senate Bill 466 passed the second reading. Bill without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 466 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 466, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. House Bill 19, clerk will read.
Representative Hanick, House Bill 19, a bill to be entitled an act to authorize the State Board of Elections to permit continued use of certain direct records electronic vote system under certain conditions. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Before we take the bill up, Chair needs to revise the earlier order. Senate Bill 466 actually is ordered, enrolled, and sent to the governor. The gentleman from Guilford, Representative Hardister, is now recognized to debate House Bill 19. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, what this bill does is it allows counties to request a one-year extension for DRE voting equipment. We actually had another bill that did this, but it was a local bill, and that was House Bill 502, which pertained to Alamance, Brunswick, Burke, Davie, Guilford, and Pamlico County. Since then, we've consulted with the State Board of Elections. We've decided to make this a statewide bill. So basically what would happen is a local board of elections, if they want to request an extension, if they're currently using a DRE equipment, they can do that. But the only way they can do that is, first of all, it's only a one-year delay, but they have to meet certain criteria, which is the Board of Elections would have to submit the request for the extension, the one-year extension for the DRE voting equipment to the State Board of Elections, and this would have to happen prior to December 1, 2020, and the County Board of Elections would have to provide sufficient information for the State Board to conclude that the usage of the DRE voting system will not jeopardize the security of the elections process. I'd ask for your support. I'm not aware of any opposition. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? Not. The question for the House, passage of House Bill 19 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock machine record the vote. 111, having voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. House Bill 19 passed the second reading. Will without objection be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enact.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 19 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 19, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. House Bill 483, the clerk will read.
Representatives Yarborough, Sane, Ray, and Brian Turner, House Bill 483, a bill to maintain an act to require a minimum size limit for every commercially and recreationally important species of marine fish to ensure that 75% of the juvenile fish of each species will have opportunity to reach maturity and spawn at least once. General Assembly, North Carolina.
The bill sponsor has indicated he will yield to amendments proceeding first, so the chair is going to go in that order. Representative Hawkins recognized to send forth amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Hawkins moves to amend the bill on page 2, lines 7 through 11, by rewriting those lines to read.
Gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, recognize to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I kindly ask my colleagues to allow me to propose this amendment, and I would like to amend page 2, lines 7 to 11, to reflect that the unappropriated fund balance of the general fund to the Division of Marine Fisheries of DEQ should be the source for planning and permitting of satellite aquarium areas and not the site of the Golden Franks home, who is the civil rights leader from Edenton. While there is a better, more appropriate source, and in honor of Juneteenth, I'd like to ask that we move forward with this amendment. I'm pretty sure that my friend from Chouan County in Edenton knows the story of those of Golden Franks and having been arrested over 89 times and being listed as the premier civil rights icon in the state of North Carolina. I think it will be in bad taste and in bad timing for us to do so, and there's also a much better source for these funds to support this project. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, gentleman from Person Representative Yarborough, rise?
To debate the amendment.
Yeah, the floor to debate the amendment.
This is a friendly amendment. We had just found some unappropriated funds to help support this bill. Representative Hawkins seems to have a much better use for them, so we found some other source. Ask you to vote for the amendment.
For what purpose, the gentleman of Chouan, Representative Godwin, rise?
Madam Speaker, that's Goodwin and Chouan.
Chouan. Goodwin. Chouan. Yes, sir.
Speaker Moore has been there recently, so he would have gotten it right, but you need to come and visit so you'll get it right.
Do you wish to speak on the amendment?
Yes, ma'am, I do. I apologize.
You have the floor to speak on the amendment.
I'm in favor of this amendment, like my colleague over there, Representative Hawkins, said. The reason he said Representative Goodwin probably knows more about this, because I think when we first came into General Assembly, I educated him on that. He was unaware of that. Mr. Franks was a World War II veteran, same age as my father, and Mr. Franks was very active in civil rights. He got arrested weekly or daily sometimes. My father told Mr. Franks to his face and told me he didn't like what he was doing, but he earned the right as a veteran to do what he was doing. Mr. Franks would go to jail and said, your 50 days is up, and they'd open the cage in that old jail and tell him he could leave. He said, no, I haven't stayed here long enough. He wanted to protest some more. So I was, when I originally saw this, I was offended that we will go take $10,000 and invest it in another bill about fishing along the coast or whatever it may be used for, and take that away from the Frink's home. It was purchased and added to the State Historic Site in Edenton. And it will be restored and be part of the visitation program that is going on there. Just for your own information, Mr. Frink's walked from Edenton, North Carolina to Washington, D.C. to represent a client who was arrested improperly to protest in our nation's capital. That's a pretty good walk just to protest one arrest. So when Mr. Hawkins says he thinks that would not be proper and would be disrespectful, I agree with him. And that's not just because that's my hometown. That's because I agree with him. Period. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment. Seeing none, question before the House is the passage of Amendment A1 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock and record the vote. 112 having voted in the affirmative, 1 in the negative, the amendment passes. Amendment will be read a third time. We don't need to read amendment a third time. Representative Yarborough, you're recognized to send forth an amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Yarborough moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 2 through 10 by rewriting the line to read.
Representative Yarborough, you're recognized to speak on the amendment.
This amendment clarifies a little bit of confusion in this bill that I didn't really think was there. DEQ has been opposed to this bill, and I can understand why, as the subject is embarrassing to a conservation agency because it is a story of failure to conserve wildlife. But this is not DEQ's fault. It's the fault of this body. For the last 25 years, the direction of DEQ has been to maximize the catch. If the question was raised about conserving the fish, it was shot down. DEQ has been expected to be a conservation agency while walking a minefield of special interest with no direction from this body at all. No wonder they don't trust this body. So there seems to be some confusion as to how far it reaching and how much this bill would tie the hands of DEQ. And that is certainly not the intention of the bill. The idea here is to give DEQ maximum flexibility in the goal of creating a spawning class of these fish that are in trouble. So I'm amending this bill to clarify that this will only apply to the 6 species listed in the bill. And hopefully this will clear up any misunderstanding about the intent of the bill. And sure, it will not clear up any understanding of the issue. Appreciate your vote for the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? Seeing none, the question before the House is the passage of Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 483. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock and record the vote. 109 having voted in the affirmative, 4 in the negative. Amendment number 2 passes, and we are back on the bill. Further discussion, further debate? Gentleman from Person, Representative Yarborough, you're recognized to debate the bill a second time?
First time.
The
wild fish that are part of North Carolina's environment belong to and are the responsibility of all North Carolinians. In the 90s, marine fishes were in trouble across the entire South. I moved to North Carolina in 1990 from the Space Coast to Florida. Florida was grappling with declining fish populations. Fisheries reform was taking place all over the South, and North Carolina did it also. Unfortunately, North Carolina's reform has not worked. North Carolina seems to be the only southern state that has done this badly. It's been almost impossible to do anything about it since then. And I think you can see why. You've heard confusing scientific claims that seem to be in direct conflict. You've heard moving stories about the good, hard-working people that are in danger of losing their lives, struggling to make a living with these declining fish populations. It's a very difficult issue, and it has proven to be too much for a volunteer board of commissioners, as well as a department of bureaucrats that just want to keep their jobs and work through this minefield. There are a lot of ways to measure the decline in the fish populations. We've had scientific studies, we've had economic studies, we've had personal stories. I think the simplest measurement is to look at the commercial landings. There's nothing really scientific about it. It's what a commercial fisherman catch every year. They go out, they catch everything they can, they sell it to the fish market, it's recorded, and it's recorded for all the states in the same way. And I've shared with you some data from NOAA that shows what the catches are in the different states. 20 years ago when we reformed fisheries, North Carolina caught more seafood than any other southern state. Since then, we have steadily gone down below Texas and Florida, almost down to North Carolina and Georgia. In the meantime, those states have maintained their stable fisheries and continue to catch fish. The decline is worse than some of our favorite fish. When I moved here, gray trout, scientifically called weak fish, was one of the most popular fish. Today, they're all but wiped out. The commercial harvest of weak fish is 2.4% of what it once was. Literally 98% of the weak fish are no longer swimming around in our waters and spawning. The spot was an incredibly popular fish. Anyone could catch them from a shore or a pier. Spot runs were an event. They're now 16% of what they once were swimming in the water. Croakers are now 10% of what they once were. Scientific reports indicate that too many of these fish are being harvested as juveniles, and there's not enough reproduction going on. When the Wildlife Resources Commission has a population that is overfished, they set the size limit where the fish are old enough to reproduce. That's what Let 'em Spawn does. It gives the Marine Fisheries Department a goal of setting size limits that would allow 75% of the fish a chance to spawn at least once. It's a simple idea. It's not going to solve everything, but it's a start. And there are exceptions. Some fish don't meet that criteria. Red drum live for 35 to 50 years. They don't even spawn until they're 5 years old, in which case we use a slot limit to allow the fishermen to keep the ones that are not very immature and yet protect the fully mature spawning class. And this has worked. Red drum is one of the species that is not on this list because it is one of the species that is not in trouble. Speckled trout or spotted sea trout is another fish that's not on this list because they are not in trouble. They have a 15-inch size limit, which means that they get to spawn twice before they're harvested. Size limits do work. There's criticism that the female fish are bigger and would make up more of the harvest. And this is exactly what's happening with flounder. The size limit is so small that only the females are taken before they spawn, but it's too big to take the males. A slot limit would be more appropriate for the flounder. And again, this is what the bill asks for, is to use the size limits to define and create a spawning class of fish. They say this will hurt the North Carolina commercial fishermen. All you have to do is look at what they're catching and how the catch is declining. Fishermen are working harder every year, catching less, and there are fewer and fewer fishermen every year. Some say that's why the catch is going down. I say the catch is going down is why there are fewer fishermen. There was a story last year in Texas about the slowdown in immigrants. The big gist of the story was that they don't have enough immigrants to run the commercial fishing fleet in Texas. This is not happening in the other states. When you go to a restaurant in New Orleans and eat a trout or a flounder, it was not caught in a gill net or undersized. It was caught by either gigged or a rod and reel. The commercial fishermen in the other states are doing fine. Every year we're told that we need more science. The only science we've really seen in the fisheries area is political science.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
Speak on the bill, and for how much time am I allowed?
The gentleman is recognized to speak on the bill. You have 15 minutes.
Wow, thank you. I don't think it'll take that long, but I do want to share something. You know, the people supporting this kind of legislation, I'm sorry, speak out of both sides of their mouths, because they're talking about how there's no fish. And yet, I want to read something to you. This is from one of the little magazines you get at the beach that talks about the sport fishing that's going on and how great they're catching. It has full of pictures of great big fish that so-called recreational sports fishermen are catching. And I just want to read you part of this little article about the Pamlico and Noose area. This is from May 9th of this year, by the way. Gary of Speck Fever Guide Service reports that speckled trout are being hooked in amazing numbers in the creeks of the Lower Noose. Fishing smaller storm soft plastic under a popping cork rig has been the most productive method. The creeks have been filled with smaller bait this spring, and anglers have been successful in fishing smaller 3 to 4 inch soft plastics to match the hatch. A few larger speckled trout to 20 inches are starting to hit Rapala skitter pop topwater plugs in the mornings, as well as on days with lighter winds. Good-sized striped bass to 20 inches are being caught around docks and shoreline structure while fishing soft plastics. Puppy drum are chewing on baits fished on the bottom, and anglers anticipate seeing their numbers go up as more fish push in from the ocean, mixing with the fish leaving the creeks. A few small bluefish are biting baits in the creeks around Oriental. James of Noose River Adventures reports that speckled trout have been biting well in creeks around Oriental and off the Bay River. A good majority of the fish are just short, 13 inches, but larger fish are mixed in. The sheer quantity of fish this year has made it relatively easy for anglers to catch their limits. The striped bass bite has been slow, but fishing baits near structure raises the chance of success in landing a few good-sized fish. Jennings of North State Guide Service reports that anglers fishing the Roanoke River are enjoying the triple-digit catches of striped bass. The keeper season closing has lightened up the boat traffic, though the fish have stuck around. Casting Z-Man and DOA soft plastics into current breaks are producing a majority of the stripers. Speckled trout fishing is good in the creeks of the Lower Noose River. Popping corks with soft plastics have been the favorite rig of anglers in the area. Puppy drum and smaller flounder are being caught around creek mouths and grassy points with soft plastics fished along the bottom. Stephen of Noose River Bait and Tackle reports that the speckled trout bite is great, with a few larger fish to 29 inches mixed in with the huge numbers of spikes in the area.
The gentleman will suspend. For what purpose does the gentleman from Orange rise?
Inquiry of the chair.
You have the floor for an inquiry of the chair.
Is the gentleman in compliance with Rule 12E?
If we'll suspend just a moment. The House will be at ease for a moment. Be happy to talk.
The money just got stripped out. Oh, he got stripped out.
I like his song.
A member of just reading it as a distraction, but the purpose of using it, the purpose of the bank is a lot of good.
Thank you. Members, having conferred with the rules chair, the intent is that a newspaper cannot be read on the floor, but he is reading it for a different purpose, and that is offering it as evidence, so he is properly within the rule.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Jennings of North State Guide Service reports that anglers fish in the Roanoke River are enjoying the triple-digit catches of striped bass. I lost some place. That's where I was before. Speckled trout fishing is good in the creeks of the lower Neuse River, popping corks. I read that before. Here we go. Stephen of Neuse River Bait and Tackle reports that the speckled trout bite is great with a few larger fish to 29 inches mixed in with the huge numbers of spikes in the area. Soft plastic swim baits fished under a popping cork have been the best rig for numbers, but live mud minnows and mirror lure MR-17s, electric chicken color, have produced some of the bigger trout. Flounder are being caught with quarter-ounce jig heads around grass banks and points. Keeping baits connected with the bottom has been helpful with hookup numbers. Striped bass are being found in creeks off the main river around shoreline structure and docks. Soft plastics have worked best, but early morning anglers are landing a few while casting topwater plugs. Richie of Eastside Bait and Tackle, and I'm getting to the good stuff, reports that anglers are catching good numbers of speckled trout in the creeks off the lower Pamlico River. Popping cork rigs have been the unanimous favorite for a majority of fish, but anglers are beginning to find more success with live mud minnows. Topwater plugs are catching a few fish too, but the weather hasn't been fully cooperative for that style of fishing. Guess what? Sometimes the weather makes a difference in how many fish you can catch. Anglers should look for overcast days with lower wind speeds to have more action while fishing on top. Flounder are being caught along grass banks on the lower Pamlico with soft plastics. This first wave of fish has been smaller, but anglers anticipate seeing the larger females push in from the ocean over the next few weeks. Striped bass are hitting topwater plugs around shoreline structure upriver, but with all the focus being downriver and on the Roanoke, the reports have been scarce. Mitchell of Fish IBX reports that the Roanoke River is still producing great numbers of striped bass. Anglers have agreed this has been a better year than those in recent memory, with reports of triple-digit days still being common, even with keeper season over. A variety of baits have worked in getting bites, from yeehaw paltail swim baits and rattle traps to live thread fin shad and topwater plugs. These fish haven't made much movement from the Weldon area, and the bites should continue to be strong for a few more weeks. That's just one example, Madam Speaker, of articles in these magazines that I get all the time when I go down to the beach that tell about how great the sport fishing is in eastern North Carolina. They show you the pictures, they tell you the stories of catching all these fish. And as you heard me read, some of these fish, it's more than they've seen in several years. So the idea that there's no fish out there is just not true. As far as commercial landings being fewer, when you go from 30,000 commercial fishermen down to 3,000, of course you're going to have lower landing levels. I mean, you're not going to catch as many fish with that many fewer fishermen being out there. That's just how that works. And as far as no breeders, when I go down to the beach, go down to Oak Island and fish on Ocean Crest Pier, stay out there at night, and there'll be a bunch of us out there catching croaker, little croaker, 6-7 inches long, one after another. I mean, we'll catch them. You have two at a time and that sort of thing. And in just a little while, you have a bunch of people that's caught over 100, each of us, catching over 100 of those little croakers. You don't think they came from little croakers, do you? Those little croakers have to come from breeders who were out there producing them. To my understanding and my feeling and my own experience, I believe all this bill is about is for the Carolina Coastal Conservation Association, CCA, the elites, to keep all the fish to themselves. That's what this is about. And the reduction in numbers of fishermen, commercial fishermen, it's not because there are fewer fish. It's because they've been regulated to death. And many of them just couldn't continue under the strict regulations that have been put on them. So this is just about killing off the commercial fishing industry some more, and we need to reject this bill. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Bumgarner, rise?
To change my vote on Amendment A1 from no to yes, please.
You shall be so recorded.
Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Catawba, Representative Adams, rise?
Debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
I'm neither a commercial fisherman or a recreational fisherman. I've tried it, and I'm still not a recreational fisherman. But I do want to help you understand what we're dealing with here and what our responsibilities are. This is about the resource, as far as I'm concerned. And my total focus is on the resource. The fisheries of North Carolina are a public trust resource. The public trust doctrine has its origins in Roman civil law. It's an essential element of the North American wildlife law and all of our laws. The doctrine establishes a trustee relationship of government to hold and manage wildlife, fish, and waterways for the benefit of the resources and the public. A trust is a collection of assets committed or entrusted to one to be managed or cared for in the interest of another. The party to whom the trust assets are committed is commonly known as the trustee. That's us. Whereas the party for whom the assets are being managed is referred to as the beneficiary of the trust. In this case, it's the people of North Carolina. The waters, the fish of North Carolina belong to all of the people of North Carolina, not the commercial fishermen, not the recreational fishermen. It belongs to all of us, and not just us, our children, our grandchildren, and generations that come before us. Governmental institutions do not own trust resources. Rather, they are owned by the public and are entrusted in the care of government to be safeguarded for the public's long-term benefit. The Marine and Estuary, this is from North Carolina statute, General Statute 113-133.1. The marine and estuary and wildlife resources of the state belong to the people of the state as a whole. The enjoyment of the wildlife resources of the state belong to all of the people of the state. Now, folks, I have looked at the data over the last 35 years. And the scientists can debate it, but I'm telling you, if you look at it, it's clear. This resource has been terribly depleted. And now we talk about, we are looking right now at the complete collapse of some of the fisheries. We've got to act. Now, I'm not a fisherman, but I was a past president of the Catawba Valley Wildlife Club. Over 400 members established in 1939 to restore wildlife in western North Carolina because there were no deer, there were no turkey, there was no game in western North Carolina. That organization is 80 years old today. And it's populated by 400 members and their families. And a bunch of those folks are fishermen. They fish in the mountains of North Carolina. They fish in the coast of North Carolina. A lot of those guys now tell me, what's the point in driving 7 hours to the Outer Banks to fish, or to the Inner Banks, as I call it, when you can go to South Carolina or Georgia or even Florida and catch more fish? So I rely on their guidance to tell me what are they seeing through their eyes. And what they tell me is they have watched over the last 30 years the fisheries in North Carolina to be greatly reduced, greatly damaged, and something needs to be done. So I sent this bill to them and asked, what do you think of this? And their reply to me was, it's a good start. It's a good start. And I went back to them and I said, well, folks, it's very, very controversial. And their reply to me was, why? And I said, because it's such a sensitive subject. It's such a sensitive subject to the commercial fishermen. And they said, well, if you can't pass this bill, how are you going to pass bills that will really address the really underlying problems? And I don't have an answer for that, folks. I look at this bill and I think that this is a good start. It establishes some rules. You know, they talk about regulations. Well, here's the 1997 Act. I've read it. And it establishes all kinds of rules and regulations, establishes the Marine Fisheries Commission. And it goes into excruciating detail about how different fisheries should be handled. But there's one thing missing from this document. One thing that's missing. It doesn't mention the public trust doctrine. It doesn't identify the waters as a public trust. I hope you'll think about this. This is an important issue. This is a small step in what is considered to be the right direction in beginning to restore these fisheries. It's not a giant leap. So I hope you'll vote green for the bill. Thank you.
What purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
To debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I'm opposed to the bill on process and substance. And the process, this bill did not make crossover, and I think that point can't be lost on us. And the referral to House Environment, which would have been an appropriate committee to hear this bill, was struck. But I do appreciate the chair of the Rules Committee indulging us, those of us who had some comments on this bill, to have the opportunity to speak. So I appreciate that. The substance of this bill, I think, is bad policy that's going to have unintended consequences. And I'm sorry I wasn't here on Monday night to memorialize Arlie Culp. I overlapped, I think, a term or two with him. But one thing I really remember about him is every time one of these fish bills came up, he would always talk about how this legislative body had enacted the Fisheries Reform Act, and we had no business getting into these fish issues, and we ought to let the Fisheries Reform Act do its work. And as someone who was an alumni of that process, I just by way of background, for those of you who don't know, I used to sit on the Coastal Resources Commission. I also was on the Marine Fisheries Commission Habitat Committee, so I dealt with a lot of these issues for several years before I moved back home. And I participated in that stakeholder process, and it was really important because it allowed all the varied interests to have input on what we were going to do on fish policy. So from my perspective, I think this proposal is not based on scientific need. It undermines the Fisheries Reform Act and the General Assembly's intent in enacting the Fisheries Reform Act. That process that was created, it's the science comes from the Division of Marine Fisheries, stakeholder committees of advisors, includes all the experts in this area and recreational and commercial fishermen, environmentalists, university professors, all participate in a very deliberative process in adopting fishery management plans for each of the important fisheries to North Carolina. And we have a current Division of Marine Fisheries whom we heard from yesterday in rules, who is committed to this process and committed to making tough decisions and committed to scientific reform. And I think we need to defer to that. The problem that I have with this bill is that, and I understand from conversations with a number of fisheries biologists, I readily admit that I'm not one, that they all agree, that objective fisheries biologists agree that this conflicts with science-based management. These species need to have species-specific management techniques. There are different life cycles, different approaches to dealing with the different species. And some size limits might make sense, but some it makes no sense. And it's sustainable without a size limit. A factor that it doesn't come to play here that definitely is affecting fish populations is climate change and warming waters, and fish are migrating. We also have impacts on water quality. We've had explosive growth in the coast over the past 20 years, and that is absolutely impacting habitat and water quality and fish health. I think that we know from the way the bill's written that there's going to be increased mortality from fish that don't meet the size limits, and I do not know if that is going to be a problem. The increasing discards, increased morbidity, it's going to effect, it's going to lead to catches that are going to be dominated by a particular sex because fish grow, female fish grow differently from male fish. We know that specifically with the southern flounder, female fish grow larger. The problem also removes flexibility with progressive fishery management tools. It would include seasons, timing, gear limits, quotas. And it also actually will increase some unnecessary regulations for those of you who do not like regulations. It's not clear to me where the enforcement's going to come from. If you've got a size limit and you've got someone out cast netting, catching juvenile fish and using it as bait fish, are we going to all of a sudden not going to be able to allow that to happen? Or is the Division of Marine Fisheries Patrol going to have to board all recreational fisher and men's boats and look in their coolers and see if they have undersized fish? I keep hearing that no other states allow this, and especially on the gill netting. I'm looking at a chart that shows that New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, South Carolina, and Georgia all allow gill netting. And as far as trawling, South Carolina allows it, and Virginia is considering adding it. I think that what we fail to take into account here is the cyclical nature of fish stocks, and it's just unpredictable. Fishing, overfishing affecting fish stocks, I'm looking at the 2016 Division of Marine Fisheries Assessment. I've read a report that said North Carolina was second only to Florida in the U.S. on coastal fishing and number of fish caught in 2014 and 2015. In a 2016 Division of Marine Fisheries report, the number of fish and shellfish population classified as viable has been trending upward since 2011. That same 2016 Division of Marine Fisheries assessment showed that a total of 75% of the species or species groups in North Carolina whose population status can be estimated are not overfished. That same report said a total of 99% of the species or species complexes in North Carolina whose population status can be estimated are not experiencing overfishing. By contrast, for the past 10 years, there's been, as I understand it, a ban on commercial and recreational fishing of river herring, striped bass, in the Cape Fear and sturgeon, yet that population has not recovered. So there have got to be other factors besides fishing that are impacting these fish populations. I just would like to submit to you all in this chamber that the fisheries biologists at the Division of Marine Fisheries ought to be allowed to do their job. And they do it upon consultation with recreational fishermen, commercial fishermen, university scientists, environmentalists, all the stakeholders who are there and work on these species. This is a cookie-cutter approach that makes no sense, and I encourage you to vote no. Thank you.
For what purpose is the gentleman from Currituck, Representative Haney, rise?
Speak to the bill.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've heard from scientists on both sides of this issue. Thank you, Representative Harrison, for that very elicit and very well thought out presentation showing real science. I urge you not to allow special interests to regulate our resources and keep hardworking taxpaying citizens from working. They did not ask for subsidies or special treatment, just the right to make a living for their families. Let the Division of Marine Fisheries do their job. In 1997, the Division of Marine Fisheries was formed. For 20 years, they had a director that did not implement the plan. That director was released. We have a new director. He is committed to implementing this plan. There is a plan in place. They say that our resource has been overfished. Then don't shut it down. Find a way to enforce the current rules and implement the current rules. Don't punish everyone. This bill is just another attempt to overregulate the fishing industry. I strongly urge you to vote against this bill and let them fish. Now, I know that some of you have been influenced for a yes vote today. I know that you have a friend of a brother whose cousin has a friend who knows a guy that has a boat that you went out on 5 years ago and caught fish. What I need you to keep in mind, and please keep this in mind, this bill will keep the guy who catches the bait that you caught that fish with from working. This bill eliminates bait fish. This will decimate fishing piers, bait shops, anyone that sells bait. The solution yesterday from a scientist was there are plastic substitutions out there. That was his answer to that. Please keep that in mind. This bill will literally destroy hardworking, salt-of-the-earth North Carolinians the ability to put food on their table. This bill has far-reaching negative consequences. We here in the legislature have been cutting and cutting the commercial fishermen for years. Eventually, the industry will die out, and that will be on our heads. Everyone here in this General Assembly will be on our heads. We are killing our heritage by voting for this bill. Make no mistake, this bill is intended to stop the commercial fishermen. That's what this bill is intended to do. We as a body, for the last 20 years, have failed to do our job and protect our most valuable resource, our citizens. Now, we as a body are being asked to vote for something that protects the resource, the fish. That's what proponents of this bill say, that we're protecting the resource. Really? Are we really doing that? Seems a little backwards to me. Watermen are a proud and vital resource. I urge you to vote your conscience and vote red. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Brunswick, Representative Aller, rise?
To debate the bill.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Some folks will think I've been here probably too long. I've been here 10 years yesterday, and one person that's been here 10 minutes longer, Rosa Gill, Representative Gill, was sworn in by Speaker Hackney 10 minutes before I was, 10 years ago yesterday. But having said that, and got the term limits folks started talking back home, let me talk about fish bills. Since I got here, it is relevant, since I got here, we tried various fish bills. I feel like I've been fighting fish bills since I got here. And all have proven unworthy of being passed by either house or certainly by both houses. This is another one of those bills. The landing chart on your desk, well, someone made the point, if you cut the number of commercial fishermen by 80 to 90% and only have 10 or 20% left, then you only got 10 or 20% of the fish you had when you had 80% more fishermen. We've cut them and we've created regulation, confusion, and uncertainty the past 10 to 20 years through actions like we're talking about today. And they don't know what to believe, don't know what to do, they're overregulated, and even the enforcers are not sure how to regulate them. This bill is a feel-good bill. It makes a few people feel good. It'll do nothing but add more confusion and run more commercial fishermen out of our state. And they will go to other states, and that's probably some of the increase in other states from our fishermen fishing there. If I could put a catfish amendment in this bill to make sure it goes down, I would do that. And that was intended. Please vote no and come to Calabash and eat all the seafood that we can catch. Thank you.
What purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, arise?
To debate the bill.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, let me preface my written notes by indicating that I am a sport fisherman. I actually did tournament fishing for quite a number of years. Go fishing as often as I can, much to my wife's consternment, but that's just the way it is. I want to point out some facts that I can provide for you in this case. I've prepared literally hundreds of tax returns for fishermen in Beaufort, Hyde County. I know these people personally. I've sat down and had long discussions with them on the things that they have to deal with, the regulations that they deal with as fishermen. The commonality I find, I've never had a single fisherman to tell me, I'm quitting fishing because I can't catch fish. They quit because they're overregulated. That's their words, not mine. They've all told me the exact same thing. There's not a lack of fish. There's an abundance of regulations running our fishermen out of business in North Carolina. Beaufort County had four fish and crab processing businesses that employed hundreds of people. We had a trucking company that every day, all day, hauled seafood from Beaufort County, from those four plants, up to Virginia and Maryland to be sold at market up there. All of those businesses are gone. Not a single one of them are left in Beaufort County. Not for lack of fish, people. For too much regulation from this very body. We have got to stop that. Please note that the people who oppose this bill, by and large, are from the coastal counties. We represent the coastal people who are dealing with these fish. And I assure you, the money you're looking at is huge if we put these commercial fishermen out of business. In the last 20 years, we have lost hundreds of jobs, not just fishermen, people. We're not just talking about the 6, 8, 10 guys that go out on the boat or the individual that goes out and does it himself. We're talking about the processing houses. We're talking about boat builders that we had in eastern North Carolina that are no longer there because there's no more fishing business. We're talking about people who repair the boats that are no longer employed. We're talking about the net makers and the people who repair the nets, the ones who sell the bait. All of those businesses are gone out of eastern North Carolina. I'll give you a couple examples. Last July, I went on a 3-hour fishing trip. I had to squeeze that in between running around getting elected. Had 3 people on my boat. We put 66 rock in the boat in 3 hours. 66. You can't do that if there's a shortage of fish. Okay? This is personal experience. By the way, if you want to come down to Beaufort County, my boat's name is Keith's Office. This way, if you come and spend the day on the boat with me and somebody calls, I ask what you're doing, you can say, well, I'm in Keith's office. We're fishing for some votes. The other thing I want to point out is we have something in eastern North Carolina we call an Interbanks Grand Slam. I don't know how many people are familiar with that. That's when you catch a flounder, a trout, a stripe, and a drum all in the same day. I'll take you down there and have you do that all day long. Most fun you'll ever have. And I honestly have to say, there's virtually never a shortage unless there's a good reason for it. Bad storms just come through, something along those lines. There are some bad years and good years, bad days and good days. That's the way it works. As the gentle lady on the other side of the aisle said, fish are cyclical. They're also changing their habits due to things that are beyond our control. They're all in God's control. Never forget that Peter cast his net out of the wrong side of the boat. When he did it the right way, he hauled up all the fish he could ask for. Last year on the 4th of July festival in Beaufort County, I went out with literally dozens of boats right there at the waterfront in front of Washington, North Carolina. Picked up my rod on the far side of the river, threw it out. In less than 5 minutes, I put 2 stripers in the boat with dozens of boats surrounding me. You could not do that if there was a shortage of fish in that water. The fish would have been shrieking under every cover they could find. But there's such an abundance of them that there, at times, it's not always that way, but at times, there's no problem to catch them if you know where to find them. I've always told people, if you can't catch fish, don't blame the commercial fish. I mean, you might want to look in the mirror. You might not know how to fish that well. That could be the problem. Fishing does change. People, that's why we call it fishing and not catching. That's why you have the name. It's a skill set you might have to develop better than what you've had in the past. Cold weather can affect it. Hot weather can affect it. Tides can affect it. Wind can affect it. A whole lot of things can affect it. To pass this bill today would kill an entire industry in eastern North Carolina called crabbing. If 483 passes, bait for crab pots will be very difficult or nearly impossible to obtain. Much of the bait currently menhaden, which are not overfished and considered healthy, but due to the minimum sizes forced by this bill, would be unavailable. Over the past 4 years, the economic impact of the blue crab, just the blue crab fishery business, averaged $25 million per year in North Carolina. That's $25 million paid to eastern North Carolina fishermen that they put back into the economic engine, not including the multipliers, packing, shipping, and all the other things that go with it. Fellow representatives, this bill is not a fish saver. It is a job killer. Do you want to be responsible for participating in eliminating yet more jobs for the entire area, and most particularly eastern North Carolina, that's still suffering from the effects of the past bad economy? The maker of this bill will tell you that I'm overreacting. Well, I'll tell you that they're overreacting. I'm a sport fisherman, and I'll tell you what. You want to catch fish? Make an appointment with me to spend a day in my office. I'll put you on some fish in eastern North Carolina. Representatives, don't swallow this stinky bait. Vote no on 483.
For purpose, gentleman from Pender, Representative Carson Smith, rise.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
This won't take long. I usually just get up and give my say, and I'm not going to make this about my heritage. It is my father and his father were commercial fishermen. I think those whale bones across the street, my granddad had a part of getting those up here. And I worked in a fish house all my life, but not all my life, in my early life. But I quickly said, you know, I think I'm going to do public safety, public service. That's what I did. I'm going to make this very simple. Let's let the scientists do their job. Let's let the Division of Marine Fisheries do their job. We have given them that duty. If we have a problem with how we do it, maybe look at making some changes. And I think we are. It's a good Senate bill. I don't even know if it's out of the Senate yet, but some things that may help us. Let's don't put them in a box. Let's allow them to make the changes they need to keep the fishing industry, both commercially and the recreational part, viable for years to come. I ask you to vote no, and I thank you very much.
For what purpose does the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
For a question of the bill sponsor.
Representative Yarborough, do you yield?
Yes.
He yields. You may propound your question.
And this is just a very sincere question, Representative. You know, it's been said here, this bill won't fix it. This bill is not a panacea. This bill is just a start. In an ideal world, and truthfully, I don't doubt your passion and your sincerity one bit. In an ideal world, what would your bill look like? If you thought that everybody here would vote for it and it would be the best for the fish, what would your bill look like? What else would it have?
Well, there's a lot of successful states that have good, thriving commercial fisheries that we can follow. But North Carolina is unique, and we're starting from a unique position. I do want the scientists to work. I want DMF to go to work. And I want them to have a different direction, though. The direction that they got coming out of the Fisheries Reform Act was to catch as much as they can, keep the commercial industry thriving as well as they can, and that clearly has failed. What this does is it says that we want a direction for our scientists of creating a spawning class of fish so that we have spawning in the ones that are mentioned in the bill. It's clear that we have those in the three species that the other representatives are talking about, the specks, the drum, and the stripers. We need to do that with the other fish, and we just haven't gone in that direction.
To debate the bill, Madam Speaker.
Representative Butler, you have the floor to debate the bill.
And I trust the sincerity, again, of your approach, but if this bill won't fix it, if it's not a panacea, if it is just a start, it seems to me that it can be done better. And I feel like the process of this bill has cut helpful stakeholders out of the process. I don't want to repeat what all has been said, but many folks have called our fishing stocks public trust resources. We have a lot of public trust resources in North Carolina. Many of them are probably impacting this very issue. water quality we haven't discussed. Destruction of habitat has had a little bit of a mention. Reducing regulations related to buffer areas. All of these things probably have much to do with the condition of our fishing stock. And so the very folks who are so all up in arms or suggest that these fishing stocks are depleted are the same ones that will vote to injure water quality, habitat destruction, buffer areas. And so I just would want to put a postscript on this. Again, as a coastal legislator, I cannot support the bill along with my fellow coastal caucus members. But until we begin to respect all of our public trust resources, it's going to be more than the fish that are in peril. I'd urge you to vote no on the bill.
Thank you, members. At this time, we will excuse the pages. I believe it's their turn to go home. They're certainly welcome to stay if they'd like, but I know their supervisor will have some say over this. But thank you for your service today, and we'll see you again tomorrow. For purposes of the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, arise.
To debate the bill.
Yeah, the floor to debate the bill.
It's real appropriate that Senator Blue has come into the chamber at this time, because I wanted to offer a bit of history about this situation. 23 years ago, 10 months and 21 days, my seatmate, Senator Blue, saw me stand on my desk in this chamber over this very issue. The reason I stood on my desk is because for the past, prior to the 20 years before, we had seen an alarming decline in our fishery to the point that it was getting to the crisis point. Now that was 23 years ago. 23 years ago. At that time, we still had catches in the millions of pounds. But the trend was so alarming over the 20 years, I felt we had to do something. So I introduced legislation along with 60 other Republicans in the House to ban netting and trawling in our estuary system so that we could do what every state from Maine to Texas has done, restore our fishery. People said I was wrong then, that I was being an alarmist, that there was nothing wrong, that there were plenty of fish to catch. All you had to go down to the coast and fish with somebody who knows what they're doing, you catch all the fish you want. Well, the bill didn't get to be heard that day, hence why I stood on my desk. At the end of the day, the Fisheries Reform Act got enacted in its place. I thought to myself, well, let's give it time. If I'm wrong, the stocks will restore and things will be well. If I'm right, we will still see an alarming decline in the resource. Well, let's look at what has happened in the past 23 years since I stood on my desk. The stocks of croaker catch in 97 were 10 million tons. They're now 1 million. In 97, spot were 2 million tons. They're now 413,000. Weak fish, 3.5 million tons. Now it's 85,000. Folks, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. We have said for 50 years now, let's let the marine fisheries work. Let's let the scientists work. We are entrusted by the people of the state of North Carolina to act responsibly. These are not my facts, y'all. We can choose to stick our hands in the sand. Yesterday, I had the privilege of speaking with a wonderful member on the other side of the aisle. And we were talking about the future of North Carolina, and he was saying, I won't name him because of the private conversation, but he was saying something that was very profound, and it struck me deeply. He said, you know, we're in a unique position now to really address the issues of our day and to fix them. Education, infrastructure, transportation, resources. We had the fourth largest estuarine system in the world. The sheer beauty of that system is breathtaking. The privilege and the responsibility that goes with that is precious. And what are we doing with it? What are we doing with it? Passing it to the Marine Fisheries Commission Act? Saying, oh, well, there's not a problem? Does anyone in this room truly believe, in view of this evidence, that we are not facing a serious problem here? If you do, then I can't convince you. But the facts are overwhelming. We must fix this problem. This bill is not the fix-all, but it's a start. It's a message. It's a signal that says we as the public trust of North Carolina, the people trust us and trusted us to act on their behalf. It is time for us to step up and do what the people expect us to do, not just here, but in education, in infrastructure, in the things that are going to make a real difference in the lives of people. That member that was telling me that we have the opportunity to solve the issues of our day and to move this day forward is so right. And this is one of those precious, precious resources that we must protect. You know, Teddy Roosevelt said, and I quote, "The nation behaves well when it treats the natural resources as assets, which it must turn over to the next generation, increased, and not impaired in value. Conservation means development as much as it does protection." I ask you this. Have we turned over to the next generation a resource that is improved? Or are we turning over a resource that is impaired? And if we are turning that resource over impaired, then it is our sacred responsibility to fix it. Folks, it is a crucial moment. It is time to stop this nonsense and to fix this problem. I urge you to vote for this bill. Thank you.
Madam Speaker.
What purpose is the gentleman from Brunswick rise?
To ask the previous speaker a question.
Representative Richardson, do you yield for a question?
Sure.
This is not a hard question, I don't think, but I see no sourcing for these facts on my desk that you were reading. Do you have any idea what the source of these so-called facts might
Marine be? Marine Fisheries Commission.
You may respond.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Marine Fisheries Commission.
What purpose is the gentleman from Paris, Representative Pittman, arise?
Speak a second time on the bill.
You have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just a couple of things I neglected to mention in my earlier comments. One thing I would say is that overfishing is not a commercial fishing problem necessarily, because I've been fishing in the interest of transparency. I may live in Concord, but I'm from New Bern. I'm a coastal guy myself. And I grew up fishing the Neuse River, the Trent River, the creeks around there, and Atlantic Beach mostly. And some at Surf City. And I'll tell you one incident that's descriptive of what I'm talking about. 39 years ago, because my daughter will be 39 next month, and it was in May of that year, we were down at the beach, and we found a great place to fish. We weren't catching anything at Scotch Bonnet Pier, which no longer exists. We just weren't catching much at all. But they found they were catching them down at Dolphin Pier, so we went down there, and in one night, my wife and I caught over 100 fish. And that weekend, her family all together, we caught over 800 fish. And we saw other people, a lot of people going off that pier with their coolers full to the brim. Some of them barely keep their lids closed on the coolers when we catch so many fish. I think years and years of doing that by, I guess you'd call me a sports fisherman. I'm just a predator. I like to fish. You might call me a sports or a recreational fisherman. Years and years of those kind of catches by people out there on the piers and in the boats and stuff, just not commercial fishermen. I think if anything had an impact, that certainly must have over the years. Then there's, you know, the last 5-10 years I've heard and read a lot about cold kills, at least a couple of times in the last several years. I've heard about the cold weather killing enormous amounts of the trout. And yet, the article I read to you just a little bit ago indicates a significant rebound in the numbers of trout. Commercial fishing had nothing to do with either the kill-off by the cold or the rebound. Somebody talked about using the smaller fish for bait. Well, I do that. And I might catch hundreds of those little tiny croakers and use two or three of them for bait. You gonna tell me that's illegal, that I'm killing off all the fish by using two or three out of 100 little croakers for bait? Reductions in the catch that was mentioned cited to coincide with the numbers that have gone down in the catch over the years. I believe they coincide more with fewer commercial fishermen being out there, and there are no proof of the stocks having depleted that much. Obviously, the fewer fishermen you have out there, the lower the catch is going to be. That's just a very simple fact, and it does not prove that commercial fishing has hurt the stocks one bit. And I know when I go to the beach, I'm not always the one catching them. Sometimes I'll stand between a couple of people and I might catch two or three fish all day, and other people around me are filling up their coolers. Either I'm not in the school, or, you know, I got the wrong bait, or something's happening. Maybe I got something on my hands that puts a smell on the bait and they don't want to bite it. Doesn't mean the fish aren't there just because I'm not catching them, because I see other people filling their coolers when I'm not catching. So it's a very difficult thing to predict. I can go to the same spot one day and catch nothing, next day go and about fill up my cooler. So it's very spotty. You cannot determine that the stocks have been depleted as much as it is claimed that they have been, just because those numbers are down for, you know, many fewer commercial fishermen being out there. So those are some facts I think we need to consider. The case has not been proven that the stocks are that low just because of lower catch rates. Also, the North Carolina Division of Marine Fisheries already enforces size limits and quotas on all of its fisheries that ensure with biological statistics the fish are substantially large enough to have spawned before they can let them do their job.
For what purpose is the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, arise?
Inquiry, Chair, Madam Speaker.
And what is your, you may make your inquiry.
Perhaps the minority leader, the majority leader, or the rules chair or the speaker can give me some assistance on 10B and also Rule 7A. And with the response to that, who is the timekeeper in the house?
Thank you for the inquiry. I will tell you that we were very aware the gentleman's time was running out. We are watching that, but I will look at your other two rules. The House will suspend for a moment. Thank you. We have responded to both of those. Thank you. For what purpose, the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Lucas, rise?
To debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I've been listening very attentively for quite some time now relative to this bill, and it seems like those who oppose the bill have very salient points. Those who are for the bill also have some very convincing points. However, there comes a time when we have to fish or cut bait. As I have listened, I've been persuaded by the commentary of Representative Yarborough as he's given us a chart that's shown a decline that's been over several years. And then I looked at the report from the Marine Fisheries Division. It also shows a decline. And I've heard that this is not a perfect bill, and as I've listened, I concur. It's not going to be perfect. But it will be an attempt to do something different in hopes of reviving our fishing industry. And so I'll vote yes. Thank you.
For what purpose does Gentleman Rowan, Representative Warren, rise?
To speak to the bill.
You have the floor to speak to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Representative Richardson said that people expect us to do the right thing. People trust us to do the right thing. I'm not so sure trust is the right word, but I do know they expect us to do the right thing. And I'm not sure that this bill really represents the right thing to do. The charts that we have on our desk, I don't think tell the whole story. And I don't know what the whole story is, but I can tell you from my many years in sales that you give me a set of numbers and you tell me what you want them to say, and I will make it work. I think when you look at this, the questions I have, based on that experience, is what isn't being told to me? What are we not looking at here? As I look at it, I see the drops in landing and the significant drop starting in 2007 also coincide with something that has nothing necessarily directly to do with fishing. That's the beginning of the Great Recession, the biggest recession we've had since the 20s. It's also, when you look from 2007 on, we had hurricanes Ike, Fran, Floyd, Irene. We've had increased regulation on that industry. So we've also had a severe drop in the number of commercial fishermen there. And I'd like to know, is there any scientific evidence of any migratory patterns based on warming oceans or anything else that are taking the fish stock further south? I don't think we can make a rational decision about on this bill based on this. So I don't want to discount it completely because I think there's some value in there. But I think from listening, I'm not on rules, thank God. But I said in that committee meeting yesterday, and I listened to the testimony, I believe we had at least 9 people speaking for and against the bill. And the one that moved me the most was a gentleman who has done this for a living. And I've come to the conclusion that if we implement this bill, we will see a further drop in the landings because there will be even less fishermen out there doing this. As I said, I've listened to the testimony. I'm not voting for the bill. And, Madam Speaker, I relinquish the rest of my remaining time to Representative Pittman.
What purpose? What purpose does the gentleman from Craven, Representative Speciale, arise?
To speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor, may debate the bill.
I want to thank Division of Marine Fisheries for being successful in some areas, and that's by the evidence that we have. That's by the comments by the sponsor of the bill. A few years ago, we had a bill, a game fish bill. Speckled trout, red drum, and I forget what the other one was. They wanted to turn them into game fish. We didn't let that happen. They said, oh, these fish are depleted. You can't get them. What would have happened if we'd have turned it into game fish? Well, you wouldn't have been able to get it on your plate at the restaurant. It would have hurt a myriad of industries, fish houses. It would have put some of the commercial guys out of business because they wouldn't have been able to survive. They also wouldn't have been able to pay the fines if they did catch too much in there. Right now, we don't have a problem with it. We don't have a problem with the red drum, speckled trout. Everybody's going out there and catching them. Go to Division of Marine Fisheries yourself and do your research. Let's look at the weak fish. Let's look at what's on here. This page here, the landings, came from Marine Fisheries. But let's look at weak fish. Wow, look at that decline. Went from, in 1997, 3.5 million pounds to 85 million pounds. Wow, what happened? Somebody in here tell me what happened. Can anybody tell me what happened? No. Nobody can tell me why. You know why? Because we don't have any marine biologists here. We don't have any people that are knowledgeable enough about fishing to be able to say that. But I can tell you one thing that contributed to it is that right now they can only bring in 100 pounds per trip. 100 pounds per trip. That certainly would account for a decrease in landings. And we're using landings, all of these charts, we're using landings. Why are we using landings? How come we're not talking about what the fish stocks are? How come it's landings? Because the landings say what they want it to say. If we have a decrease in landings, it makes it appear as if there's a decrease in the fish. It makes it appear as if there's a problem that's bigger than it really is. Again, if you go to Division of Marine Fisheries site, and it talks about some of these very fish that he's got that we've got on this bill, and it says there's no problems with the stocks, no verifiable problems, nothing that would cause any requirements for any immediate action. And yet, we have this bill. And every 2 years, we have a bill. And every 2 years, that bill is different. It's something else. It's this idea, or that idea, or the other idea. Everybody has an idea, and that's great, but the problem is there's nobody here that really knows what the problem is. And that's why DMF was put together. They were put together to fix the problem. And we can sit here and we can say that they haven't done anything. We can say all that stuff. But you know what? Fishing in North Carolina has increased. Sport fishing has increased. How is that possible if there's no fish? If we're having problems with the fish stock, how is that possible? There's been no biological surveys since the 90s. So how do we know how many fish are out there? We know what we hear. We hear anecdotal evidence. Hey, you know, when I was a kid, I used to catch them this big, and now I'm only catching them this big. Could be a million reasons for that. One, you forgot how to fish. Two, fish migrate. They don't stay in the same place all the time. This is a subject that, this is a bill that, in my opinion, should never have hit this floor. Because we don't have the knowledge here. That's why we hired the folks, the scientists that are on Division of Fisheries. And if there is a problem, if there actually is a problem, and I'm not saying there isn't, I'm not saying there is, but if there is a problem, is this bill the solution? And I submit to you that it is not. If there is a problem, I suggest that the problem is maybe something that DMF is not doing, and maybe we need to get with them and find out what it is we need to do. But again, we don't know what the stocks are. We don't know if there's a problem. We're just getting anecdotal evidence. Everybody's in a rush to want to do something because we hear these stories. Oh man, look, you're still getting the fish on the plate. You're still getting the numbers of fishermen have decreased. You've heard that. It's a few decades ago, it went from 30,000 down to about 3,000 right now. That is going to affect the landings. That is affecting. We're putting our people out of business. One of the first things that the bills that I had to tackle when I got up here was a fish bill that I was opposed to. And the comments heard were, commercial fishing industry is going to be dead within 10 years. That's what I heard by folks who had been here a lot longer than me. And my response to them is the same response as it is today. If that's the case, it's not our place to put the nail in the coffin. If the commercial fishing industry in North Carolina is going to see its demise over the next few years, then it needs to be a natural demise. And it doesn't need to be because we have hastened it by improper regulation, by passing bills that we know nothing about. I want you to think about how many bills in the past that we have had to correct something because we didn't take it full circle. There will be unintended consequences of this bill. There will be fishermen. If this bill passes, there will be fishermen out of business. There will be fish houses closing. It's going to affect the coast. That's exactly why you have all the coastal legislators saying, please, do not do this. If the folks that lived up in the mountains had an issue there and we weren't really that knowledgeable about it, and you asked us, please, don't support this. I think most of us would support you in that endeavor. And so I'm asking you, I know I have, and I'm asking you, support this state and do what's right. Support your legislators, coastal legislators, who know what's going on, who know what's going to happen if this bill passes. Here's what I suggest we do. I suggest we don't pass this bill. We wait. We set up a task force, whatever you want to call it, to get work with marine fisheries and find out where we're at on fish tax and find out what we need to do, if there's things we need to do. Let me remind you that a couple of years ago, we passed a bill, okay, in the interest of wanting to do something about something that we know nothing about. The commercial fishermen volunteered to have their fishing license fees doubled. Do you remember that? Anybody that was here? They volunteered to do that. So we doubled their fees, and the requirement was, or the purpose of that additional money was to put observers on board, because they said, we have nothing to hide. The commercial fishermen have done everything that we've asked them to do. They have done everything that we have said, hey, will you do this voluntarily so we don't have to? They have done everything. Let's not beat them over the head and put them out of business on something that we know nothing about. I ask you to please vote this bill down. Let's put a task force together. Let's get with the speaker and push him into putting something together, a team to work with fisheries and come up to some solution, because we don't need to be doing this every 2 years. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Currituck, Representative Hainig, rise?
To speak to the bill a second time.
You have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Richardson is correct. Catches are down. The question is why. Numbers and statistics, they don't tell a story. I'll use Croker as an example. Much evidence shows that Croker are migrating to colder waters. Catches are up in Virginia and Maryland over the last 10 years. That's just one example of statistics and numbers not telling the whole story. In 1997, the Division of Marine Fisheries was formed. We as a body, because of special interest or ideas, have not allowed the Division of Marine Fisheries plan to be implemented. Representative Lucas, my good friend, spoke to trying something new. Trying something new. I agree with that. Let's try something new. Let's let the Division of Marine Fisheries do their job. We have a new director, and we have a plan. Let's let them implement it, and let's stay out of their way. Thank you.
Members, the last speaker I see in the queue is Representative Yarbrough. It is the intention of the chair to allow Representative Yarbrough to have the last word. Is there anyone else who needs to speak before Representative Yarbrough? Seeing none, Representative Yarbrough, you're recognized for the final speech for 5 minutes.
I want to thank everyone for their patience. We've been debating this, talking about it for well over an hour. And I think we've really proven my main point in all of this, that no one knows exactly what to do. And it is a minefield of passion, arguments, science says this, science says that, we're going to kill an industry, we're going to save an industry. It's no one really knows the answer to that. And that, to me, is why the Fisheries Reform Act has failed. Because we're expecting a board of volunteers on the commission to wade through this stuff. And we're expecting a department of bureaucrats who have to make everybody happy, and that they end up making no one happy because they can't actually do anything. That's why it is up to us who are elected, and particularly those of you that live in areas where the people own these fish, but you're not influenced by all these special interests that are pushing you around and pushing you to go this way or that way. And so I'm asking you to take this simple step to give the bureaucrats and the volunteers a little bit of direction in this, to let them know that we do want to save this resource, that we want our commercial fishermen to do better like they do in the other states, and that this body cares. Appreciate your vote.
Further discussion, further debate. Chair's going to give a moment for members to come back. If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 483 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Terry, wish to record? Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 58 having voted in the affirmative, 54 in the negative. House Bill 483 passes second reading. And is there objection to the third reading on the bill? Having been objected to, it remains on the calendar. For what purpose does the gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, rise?
Change my vote on HB 37 to aye, please.
On House Bill 37?
Yes, sir.
The gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on House Bill 37. Representatives Howard, Setzer, Soka, Conrad, Ross, and Warren recognize sent forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Howard, Setzer, Soka, Conrad, Ross, and Warren, Finance Committee report, Senate Bill 55. Continuing education with general contractors, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
House Bill 343, authorized LSC criminal records check, favorable committee substitute, unfavorable original bill, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Original bill is placed on the unfavorable counter, committee substitute, referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 559, storms, securitization, alternate rates, favorable House Committee substitute, unfavorable Senate Committee substitute.
Senate Committee substitute is placed on the unfavorable counter. The House Committee substitutes referred to the Committee on Energy and Public Utilities.
House Bill 429, navigable waters, Mandy O'Hyde, favorable Committee substitute number 2, unfavorable Committee substitute number 1, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Committee substitute number 1 is placed on the unfavorable counter. Committee substitute number 2 is referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
House Bill 557, Municipal Omnibus Bill. Favorable committee substitute number 2, unfavorable committee substitute number 1, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Committee substitute number 1, unfavorable counter. Committee substitute number 2, referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
House Bill 872, Underground Utilities Safe Act Changes. Favorable committee substitute number 2, unfavorable committee substitute number 1, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Committee substitute number 1, placed on the unfavorable counter. Committee substitute number 2 is referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 80, China Grove, East Spencer Satellite Annexation. Favorable House committee substitute number 2, unfavorable House committee substitute number 1.
House committee substitute number 1, placed on the unfavorable counter. House committee substitute number 2. Will be counter percent rule 36B. This is a satellite annexation. Does anybody know of any objection on this? This is the China Grove East Spencer satellite annexation. Any objection added to today's counter? Hearing none, so ordered. Representatives Grange and Hall, right now send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Grange and Hall, Election Ethics Law Committee report, Senate Bill 220, removal of political signs of citizens, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Those are referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
House Bill 477, four-year terms, Town of Bethel, favorable committee substitute, unfavorable original bill, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Original bill is placed on the unfavorable calendar. The committee substitutes referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 674, Sutter County, Mount Airy, Elkins City, and Board of Education partisan, favorable House Committee substitute, unfavorable regional bill, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Regional bill is placed on the unfavorable calendar. House Committee substitutes re-referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. We do have one bill remaining to take up, but before we do that, for what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, rise?
Inquiry of the chair, Mr. Speaker. I have a serious question. Mr. Speaker, having set through House Bill 483.
Does the gentleman wish to make a motion?
No, sir, Mr. Speaker. I'd be out of order doing that.
The gentleman's question, I guess, is why were we not able to take care of third reading?
No, sir.
Let me go ahead and answer that because others may have had that question. There was a title change to the bill, so in order to take the third reading up today would require suspension of the rules.
Yes, sir. I realize that, Mr. Speaker. But what I was asking for my other inquiry with the chair is that, having sit through that, is it possible that we can come in possibly early tomorrow, you know, to take up the chamber of business if there is any?
We'll see.
We need to check the calendar for the committees tomorrow. And I think we told folks that this week, as far as through Thursday, could be a little longer week than we normally have because of the budget process. But members will not have to be here on Friday. But there is some business that we'll need to take care of tomorrow. So the calendar, there may be a good number of bills on tomorrow's calendar, but the chair is going to check that shortly. So, Senate Bill 95, Corker Reed.
Senator Bergen, Senate Bill 95, a bill to be entitled Veterans Memorial Funds Do Not Revert. General Senator North Carolina next.
Gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognize to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this bill has three parts to it. Section 1 merely extends the deadline to June 30th, 2020 for funds that have already been appropriated to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs for the construction of public facilities at the North Carolina Veterans Memorial Pavilion in Broadway. Section 2 of the bill expands sewer and wastewater infrastructure. This is a purely technical change. This will allow the Department of Environmental Quality to use money that has already been allocated to them for extension of water infrastructure to also use that funding for wastewater infrastructure. Mr. Speaker, those are the two parts of the bill that I am carrying.
Gentleman from Stokes, Representative Hall, is recognized to send forth an amendment. Corporal Reed.
Representative Hall moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 7, by rewriting the lines to read.
Gentleman's recognized. Debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment is just purely technical. This was a grant given to the City of Mount Airy in last year's budget. It simply takes out the word extension, and I appreciate your support.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Mr. McNeil, Mr. McZachary, do you gentlemen wish to vote on the bill? Clerk Watt Machine record the vote. 110 have voted in the affirmative, 1 the negative. The amendment is adopted. Now back on the bill. Gentleman from Harnett, for what purpose does the gentleman rise?
May I speak a second time?
Gentleman's recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I'd now like to speak on sections 3 and 4, which apparently I also was supposed to do. Section 3, this deals with grants and aid for beach hurricane preparation. As you know, hurricane season is already upon us, and there is an urgency in getting these funds directly to the cities where there is need. There's no additional study or planning needed. These towns already have plans in place and are ready to use these funds. Section 4 deals with repurposing unused funds to alternate natural and cultural resource related projects. Basically, again, this is already appropriated funds. It allows the department to move funds to other sites that need them. So, Mr. Speaker, I'll be glad to answer questions, but this has been through three committees, and I'm not aware of anyone who's opposed to the bill.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House, passage of Senate Bill 95 on second reading. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 112 having voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. Senate Bill 95 passes second reading. This would require suspension of the rules to take up third reading because of the change in title. Is there objection to suspension of the rules for the purpose of the bill having its third reading? Hearing none, the rule is suspended. The bill is entitled to its third reading. Clerk will read.
General Senator North Carolina Annex.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 95 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 95, having passed its third reading, be returned to the Senate and is ordered engrossed as well. Members, session tomorrow will be at 1 p.m. For what purpose, gentlemen from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, rise.
Change of vote on the Amendment 95A1 to no.
Just a moment, make sure the clerk gets that. Gentlemen, wish to be recorded as having voted no on Amendment A1 to Senate Bill 95.
Correct, Mr. Speaker.
Gentlemen, be recorded as such. Notices and announcements. Oh, I'm sorry. It looks like we did add additional bill. Pardon me. This is the Senate Bill 80. The clerk will read.
Senator Ford, Senate Bill 80, a bill to be entitled an act removing the cap on satellite annexation for the town of China Grove. General Senator North Carolina.
Gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this simply adds China Grove, the town of China Grove, to the list of more than 100 other towns that have the opportunity to do satellite annexations, voluntary satellite annexations. I anticipate only one negative vote, and appreciate your support.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question before the House. Passage of Senate Bill 80 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock machine record the vote. 107 having voted in the affirmative, 2 in the negative. Senate Bill 80 passed the second reading and remains on the calendar. Members, that one cannot have a third reading. That's a roll call vote. Now we'll move to notices and announcements. For what purpose, the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Bell, rise.
For an announcement, Mr. Speaker.
Ladies recognized.
Thank you. I rise today to formally announce the formation of the Joint Legislative Women's Caucus. Our caucus includes all the women of the House and Senate, and we discuss issues of common interest. I'd like to thank our new leadership team, my co-chair, Senator Joyce Kravitz, Vice Chairs Representative Donna White and Joyce Waddell, Secretary Representative Jean Farmer Butterfield, and Treasurer Senator Vicki Sawyer. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank our former leaders, co-chairs Representative Pat Hurley and Senator Erica Ingram, Vice Chairs Representative Yvonne Holly and Senator Kathy Dunn, Secretary Representative Pat McElrath, and Treasurer Senator Valerie Fushi. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. What purpose, gentlemen from Alamance, Representative Riddell, rise.
Make an announcement.
Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Friends, regulatory reform at our regular time on Thursday, 11 a.m., room 1228, four bills to go over. Thank you.
Any further notices or announcements? What purpose, the gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, rise.
For an announcement.
Gentlemen's recognized.
Members, as many as some of you that were in the House Act Committee today, we heard the discussion on the Farm Act. I would encourage all members who have any questions or concerns about any of the provisions in the Farm Act to see one of the chairs or communicate to us your concerns. We will meet again next Wednesday at the same time to continue the discussion on the Farm Act. So any of you, we would like to do committee work in committee, rather than wait until we get to the floor to do committee work. So if any of you have any concerns, my door is open. Representative Strickland and Representative Brisson's door is open. Let's discuss this and vet it thoroughly so that when we do bring it to the floor for a vote, we will understand what we're doing. Thank you.
Mr. Clerk, Chair is withdrawing House Bill 112, Roanoke Rapids Local Option Sales Tax, from the Committee on State and Local Government. The bill is recommitted to the Committee on Finance. Further notices or announcements? If not, the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn to reconvene on Thursday, June 20th at 1 o'clock p.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Lewis moves, seconded by Representative Brisson, that the House now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, June 20th at 1 p.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Stand adjourned.